Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, text number 5. Udharadatmanatmanam. Atmanam avasarayat. Atmaiva yatmano bandur. Atmaiva ripuratmanaha. Udharad. One must deliver. Don't seem very impressed by that word. Let's try it again. One must deliver. Atmana by the mind. Atmanam, the conditioned soul. Na, never. Atmanam, the conditioned soul. Avasarayat, put into degradation. Atma, mind. Eva, certainly. He, indeed. Atmana, of the conditioned soul. Bandhu, friend. Atma, mind. Eva, certainly. Ripu, enemy. Atmanam, of the conditioned soul. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. Purport. The word Atma denotes body, mind, and soul, depending upon different circumstances. In the yoga system, the mind and the conditioned soul are especially important. Since the mind is the central point of yoga practice, Atma refers here to the mind. The purpose of the yoga system is to control the mind and to draw it away from attachment to sense objects. It is stressed herein that the mind must be so trained that it can deliver the conditioned soul from the mire of nescience. In the material existence, one is subjected to the influence of the mind and senses. In fact, the pure soul is entangled in the material world because the mind is involved with a false ego, which desires to lord it over material nature. Therefore, the mind should be trained so that it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature, and this way the conditioned soul may be saved. One should not degrade himself by attraction to sense objects. The more one is attracted by sense objects, the more one becomes entangled in material existence. The best way to disentangle oneself is to always engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. The word he is used for emphasizing this point, that one must do this. It is also said, manak eva manushanam karnam bandha mokshayo bandhaya vishaya sango muktyai nirvishayam manaha. For man, mind is the cause of bondage, and mind is the cause of liberation. Mind absorbed in sense objects is the cause of bondage, and mind detached from the sense objects is the cause of liberation. Amrita Bandhu. Bindu, Upanishad 2. Therefore, the mind which is always engaged in Krishna consciousness is the cause of supreme liberation. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhute, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharne Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskadhyade Satarne. Here in this verse we have the mind and we have the false ego. Now, besides that we have the intelligence. And as Krishna says at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, that one who says Adyeshita Chiya Imam Dharmam Sampadam Aviyam Jnana Jagnena Tenaham Istakswam Iti Memiti, that I declare that he who studies the sacred conversation of mine worships me by his intelligence. And that one who listens to this conversation will become pious and will attain to the place where the pious people dwell. Shadavan Anasuyascha Sopimukta Sabaloken, let's see. Srinyarapiyonara sopi mukta sabalokan prapnuvat punya karmana. And I declare that one who listens with faith and with envy becomes free from all sinful reactions and attains to the planet where the pious dwell. So this is a process of using our intelligence. But how to use the intelligence? Use the intelligence to fix the mind upon Krishna. Now, the intelligence can also be utilized in other ways. As said in the third chapter, that the senses, indriyani, mudobudhira, indriyani hicharitam, no, that's not right either. Indriyani puranmanak, Indriyani mano buddhir asya dishtanam uchite aitharavi mahodatyayitka gyanam avritti dehinam. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust which veils the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So generally we don't think of the intelligence as lusty. Nor do we think, we can think of the mind as being lusty or the senses being lusty, but generally we don't think the intelligence is lusty. And we're not quite clear how we get a false ego. But here it explains in this verse how it all happens. And the beginning is just hearing. Just like the deer, he hears the sound of the hunter's flute and he becomes stunned and he becomes a victim of the hunter's arrow. So similarly, hearing the glories of sense gratification, when we become associated with such glories and we become attracted to them, then the senses become the repositories of all kinds of lusty desires. Lusty desires influence the spirit soul to acquire a false ego by which he misidentifies himself. Oh, next, the intelligence becomes the reservoir of all lusty, the capital of lusty propensities. Thus, the intelligence influences the soul to acquire a false ego by which it identifies itself with the mind and senses for sense gratification. In other words, if intelligence is not clear, if it's associated with the desire to gratify the senses and the mind, then Maya provides the soul a false ego and an inspiration to do so. As soon as the soul becomes involved and the lusty desires, and then wants to fulfill them with lusty intelligence, then Maya gives us a false, we're put under the spell of the false ego, and then we're lost. That's explained in a different way. Dhyayato vishayam pumsam sangas te shupajayate sangas sanjayate kama kama krodo pajayate. So the last thing is the loss of intelligence. But there is a lot that happens before that. In other words, when the soul looks around and tries to figure out, is there something enjoyable, then it gets inspired by lust. Especially when it focuses on some object, then Maya supplies lust. Because without lust, the material world would be quite boring. There wouldn't be anything going on here. If one actually had no feeling, because the soul, he lives by feeling. I mean, most souls. I mean, some souls are really on the intellectual platform and they just exist feeding off their false ego of how intelligent they are, how they can analyze everything in 100 different ways without ever coming to a definite conclusion. So, still one has some feeling of how great one is, how wonderful and intelligent one is. So everyone lives by feeling because feeling is experience, is enjoyment in the material, in any material or the spiritual world. If you didn't feel anything, you go crazy. They do experiments where they take away people's sensory ability. They put them in some dark room where you can't see. They cover their hands with gloves, and their feet with gloves, so they can't feel anything. They can't smell anything. They can't taste anything. they can't hear anything, and they just go crazy. Because the mind needs sensory enjoyment, sensory impulse in order to enjoy experience. In any case, we look around, we see something we like, and we say, that's for me. And then Maya inspires us with lust. Yes, that is for you. It's love, we call it. I'm deeply in love. I can't. Lust, I mean love without you. Live without you. And then we try to enjoy the senses. And if we enjoy them, we want more. Just like Vishwamrita, as I mentioned the other day, he was only wanted to take a little peek to see what Urvashi looked like. Or Menaka, actually, it was Menaka. And he took a little peek and he decided it was too good to refuse. And he didn't try to enjoy once, he tried to enjoy for 100 years before he got dissatisfied. I mean, we don't even live for 100 years. And then he went back to his meditation again. So then there's greed. And after greed, because greed can never be satisfied. And as we know, Vishwamrita, the next time around, after 60,000 years of meditating, when he heard the Apsara's ankle bells, he became so angry he burned to ashes with his eyesight. So instead of lust this time, he had anger. And then after lust and anger, after another 60,000 years, no Apsara in her right mind would ever go and try to allure him again. So he got second initiation. So from lust comes greed, and from greed comes frustration and anger, because greed can never be fully satisfied. Until, even if you control the whole universe like Hiranyakashipu, he was always angry and frustrated. Because it was not enough. So he was always taking heavy intoxication. And when his little boy wouldn't listen to him, all the demigods were bowing down to him. Narada Muni was practically his footstool. And this little 5-year-old kid say, forget it. Forget it, Dad, you're just a demon. I'm not going to listen to you. So he flipped out, we could say. He became completely disturbed. How dare you? He became angry. And of course, from all this lust, anger, and greed, it just puts us into a whole world of illusion or delusion. A whole drama is being played out where we actually believe it's all happening to me. I'm like the center of some kind of drama that's going on. My material existence is some kind of drama that's going on. And then from that drama, we forget more and more who we actually are. The more we become absorbed in that drama, the more it becomes harder and harder to remember reality, any bit of reality we had at some point. It all becomes lost. And our intelligence, because we have nothing to relate to, we can't remember anything. Therefore, intelligence gets lost also. And what happens? Then we just wind up gratifying more and more. Punak punas charvata charvananam, getting deeper and deeper into sense gratification. Any reluctancy to gratify the senses, any feeling of remembrance that this wasn't good or that it's not the proper thing to do is just washed away. The more we gratify our senses, the more we become animalistic. As we can see, society, minor society, is just gradually just going down, down, down. What was considered abominable 10 years ago is considered normal nowadays. And what's considered abominable today, perhaps in 10 years from now, will be considered the normal. If you're not doing it, you're considered to be rather strange. Unless Krishna puts some brakes on Kali Yuga, it's going quite fast. Because there are no restraints. People have no knowledge. They have no spiritual intelligence. They don't know that they're not their body. They don't know the problem of endlessly trying to gratify their senses, how it degrades them deeper and deeper into material existence. That they don't know. So here Krishna says that one has to learn to elevate himself by his mind. That it does matter where we put our mind. It's not all equal. That whatever my mind and senses tell me, I just go and do it. And it's all right. Whether I go and see the deities or I watch, you know, YouTube, a horror movie on YouTube, it's all the same because my mind feels satisfied. That's not the way it works. That if our mind is absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then we become happy. And if our mind is engaged in anything else, we'll never feel actually satisfied. So that's the only thing we have to do, is be convinced of that and our life is perfect. We don't require any other knowledge, simply that. That if we put our minds on Krishna, our life will become successful, and if we put it on anything else, then we'll be in one way or another, we'll be in trouble. Okay, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. You mentioned that Narada Muni was practically a footstool for Hiranyakashipu. And there is one verse, I couldn't find it immediately, where it seems that even Narada was
serving him.
Serving,
yes. Yes, he was serving.
So how come that Narada Muni serves Hiranyakashipu?
Because Narada Muni has a very good service attitude. I don't know. I mean, obviously Narada Muni was, this is some kind of pastime. Why Narada Muni was doing it, yes, Srivastava Thakura, you can ask him, he brought it. I don't know. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.